Perhaps we here in what might be called Squaresville shouldn't be talking about the beat generation. We're not hip. But I did go to school with Jack Kerouac and Allen Ginsberg, two men who've been called the high priests of the beat generation, and so I can't restrain myself. We're going to talk about the generation today. Let me introduce my guests right now. My first guest is Mr. Norman Podhoretz, who is literary critic and author of an article entitled "Where Is the Beat Generation Going?" that appeared in the December Esquire. My second guest is Miss Maria Manis, critic and reviewer for the Reporter magazine and author of one of the most interesting books published in recent times, "More in Anger: Some Opinions Uncensored and Unteleprompted." And my third guest is Mr. John Ciotti, professor of English at Rutgers University, poetry editor of the Saturday Review. I think, Mr. Ciotti, that I'd begin with you, because before the program, we were talking about what is this thing called the beat generation, and I'd ask whether you think there is such a thing as a generation here at hand.
Well, I don't know. I don't know whether there is a generation. I don't know whether it's the beat generation. I find myself thinking of it as the borscht generation. I think it's gone through the blender and come out as soup. I'm not sure, but what this is an invention of the fact that our magazines have to have articles from time to time. Mr. Luce had a gap in life one time, so he did this great spread on the beat generation. Everybody's been talking about it ever since.
I would think it was inflated far beyond its importance, either artistically or humanly. Not that I want to minimize the fact that it has significance, that the young are as they are, but I'm amused at the thought that lost generation, beat generation, all these are terms of self-pity. And I find this one of the most repulsive aspects of the self-conscious youth, this being awash with self-pity, a kind of miserable revolt. Yeah. Against what?
But you do seem to feel that there is a generation that feels so
About well, itself. They are labeled. It's a sort of vicious circle. A certain proportion of them genuinely do behave in certain ways and cling to each other in a sort of defensive pact against the world. I don't think it's a majority, but it's strong enough to make itself felt. But I would like to ask why it is always in terms of beat or lost or shook up. It's things done to them. They seem to be incapable of doing things for themselves.
Because I've never heard of a happy generation. Nobody's ever called anything a happy generation. But Mr. Podhoretz, I interrupted you.
I think it's an interesting question. There seems to be a tradition in modern life, or anyway dating from the early 19th century, for young people to assume that they've been persecuted by society and by their elders. I doubt if you find this kind of thing in European literature, and American literature for that matter, before the early 19th century. And this is a very firmly fixed tradition, so that I dare say that young writers who are terribly ambitious don't know how to assert themselves except by proclaiming that they've been persecuted to begin with.
I think we all do such a sad job of being parents. What can you tell a child that will put him in contact with the thing to live by? We hand out a phony piety. We hand out little moral maxims. You mustn't do this and you mustn't do that. And the reasons we give are uniformly bad. Certainly anybody with parents has something to rebel against.
Ah, but you talk of pieties and you talk of the hypocrisies. Surely there is an absolute there in ethics, very simple ethics, of right and wrong, of justice and decency, of honesty. These aren't pieties, are they, surely? Is it so difficult to pass on to your child, even in this difficult world, that there are certain things that are simply wrong from every standpoint?
Well, let me interrupt and ask, are you implying that we have not handed these things on to what is self-labeled the beat generation, and therefore it is beat and pities itself?
I think to a large degree Mr. Ciotti is right that we have not done a very good job as parents, but I took it from what he said that we really had nothing to hand on, that all these virtues had been so vitiated or so weakened that there was no longer a code to pass on. And this I take issue with.
I have this thought. I think there is a code to pass on, but it's a difficult code to pass on.
Yes,
any generation of parents cannot do much more than repeat to their children what society makes it possible for them to repeat unless they are really aware of a problem and facing it, and most parents are not. Most people are not consciously aware of trends in time. They're doing the thing that comes naturally. If you have a fixed formal society in which the moral maxims you inherited from your great-grandfather and his great-grandfather and so forth are still working within the society, that's one thing. But our society changes out from under us so fast. It becomes strange. How am I to teach the children thrift as a virtue, for example, when it's their obvious public duty to be extravagant, to keep up this crazy economy in which we live?
They're asked to be extravagant. In fact, they're expected to be.
They're required to be extravagant unless we're going to go in the soup.
Well, now, wait a minute. How does this make for the or a beat generation? Mr. Pothor had said before, just a moment ago, that we have a tradition of self-pity.
Revolt.
But
rebels always begin by saying that they've been persecuted or deprived of their natural rights.
Well, let me ask you the question very simply. Do you think that they have something to rebel against? Is this legitimate rebellion?
That's the curious question as regards the young American rebels. If you compare them with the literary rebels, anyway, in England, called the Angry Young Men, you find that the contrast is between a set of young people, that is the young Englishmen, who are rebelling against something very solid and something very specific. That is to say, there still exists in England a strong enough, a forceful enough structure of ideas, notions, ways of life, so that somebody who feels himself to have been persecuted or deprived or something as a result of this ethos gets up and fights by arguing. The situation in this country is very different. The young rebels seem to have no notion of what they're fighting against so much. There's a vacuum out there. I mean, we know that in American society, most children who want to rebel are never quite clear as to what they're rebelling against, because everything gives way before them.
I think there's enough clarity in this. Supposing you are a bright young man, you want to see the shape of your life as it comes. How do you make a life career for yourself? If you want to be economically responsible, for example, what are your chances? You either have to become a small-town businessman or fall into some extraordinary category or go to work for a corporation. And certainly anybody with sensitivities and some emotional vigor in them could find the hypocrisy of corporation life reason enough to say it all stinks, I'm done with it, out.
Yes.
I refuse any of these values whatever.
Well, I think the corporation is our establishment. It's the equivalent of the English establishment, the group thing, the organization, this great faceless mass. And I do think there is a valid ground there for revolt. And I don't blame the young for feeling this revolt. But what I do blame them for is the nature of their revolt, which is so incredibly negative. Tell me if I'm wrong in that the so-called lost generation, certainly in the literary field, at least worked. Didn't they?
You mean worked for a
worked.
Living?
Worked on books.
Yes, but there were some men in the lost generation. This is a boys' rebellion. This beat generation is adolescence. It has no sense of anything but me. It's for kicks. It's the way I happen to feel. It's in literate terms, it's the equivalent of what the psychologists call fun morality among the juvenile delinquents. The thing is good if it's fun. Unless it's fun, it's no good. Also, they have a sense that they're the first men in time. Nobody ever came before them on this planet, and nothing follows from them.
No rebellion before them?
Not even that.
They don't acknowledge the past.
They have no past.
Well, there is a certain acknowledgement in Kerouac and Ginsberg. Yeah, and of certain, you know, French bohemian traditions.
All right. This follows in any literary tradition. You give yourself some weight by latching onto the fact that this has some continuity. But still, this is a me revolution. This is the child screaming me.
But isn't that in itself what you've described? Really, is what a great many sociologists have described as the general pattern of American history. That is, every generation in America is said to operate by refusing to acknowledge continuity with the past. We're always making fresh beginnings. We're always refusing to take anything as settled or established. And similarly with the fun morality, This is not merely an adolescent matter. There's something very deeply, profoundly American about fun morality. We are the only people in the world who've ever talked about a right to happiness and who've ever permitted ourselves to assume that if you're not happy, there's something wrong with you.
Of course, I would bring this down a number of years from adolescence to infantilism, because this kick business is really what the sociologists, call the immediate gratification of pleasure. I mean, that you want something immediately, and it must be gratified, regardless. This is even younger, I say, than adolescence. This is babyhood.
Well, let me clarify something here, because it seemed to me that a moment ago, you, Miss Manus, and Mr. Charlie in particular, were giving good reasons for rebellion. And then I thought to myself, if you write a book called More in Anger, and you're angry in it, and you say so, what is the distinguishing point between, or line between you and you two gentlemen, who I suppose are angry in many ways, and this beat generation?
Well, for one thing, age. I'm 50.
It's
no
a,
numbers,
it's a courageous
please.
It's a public proclamation.
It's a matter of emotional age. Sure, there are things to be angry about, but I hope that the four of us take our angers as not having been born yesterday. They go back thousands of years. They're part of the human position on the planet.
Well, then,
this beat jazz has no history. It has no past.
I think it's a fine combination of words. This beat jazz. You say it has no history.
No, not within the minds of. I don't see any sense of any past in Kerouac. I don't see any sense of any past in Ginsberg.
Well, I hate
except
to be
that they latch on to Zen Buddhism as largely for kicks, as nearly as I can see.
Well, I hate to be driven into the position of defending Kerouac and Ginsberg, neither of whom I admire particularly, but I do think that Ginsberg, especially, has a very firm sense of a past, and he's involved in a kind of arrogant assertion of his, I don't know, somebody, you know, the laying on of the hands has operated there, trying to synthesize Whitman and Rambeau or what have you. There is some notion of a past there. To me, it seems that the major problem of the anger is that it is diffuse and undirected, as I don't see this as a revolt against the organization or anything of that sort. It seems to me to have something more in common with an infantile tantrum. I agree with Miss Manus.
Well, there's something essentially silly about Ginsberg's mind.
Where does this literary criticism end, and insulting a fellow who isn't here to defend himself?
He's here in his writing. Let me put it this way: I pick up Howl and I start it. It says about this at the beginning: "Have I not seen the best minds of my generation howling down the Negro streets of midnight, looking for an angry fix?" So that's about
well,
it.
Well, hasn't I'm, he?
The
you
best minds
hasn't?
Of his generation?
Well, what do you think?
My answer is no, boy. You've seen some of your hipped-up friends doing this, but they are not the best minds of this generation
generation. But you just a moment ago said, what about the young man who's thinking into the future? What about his own career, his own future, and what does he have to think
about?
Well,
I certainly do not assume that every bright young man that looks at our hypocrisies has to become beat as a result
but
of
you made, you
I
made...
have lots of good students, as bright as Kerouac and as bright as Ginsberg, who are not beat.
But then why do you yourself bemoan the fate of those who are involved in our corporation society and the organization society? Aren't you just as much a part of making these men feel this way?
Good God, no. Do you want me to endorse the organization, man, because I think the beats are silly?
No, but
I think these are two absurdities, one on either side. Let's be Aristotelian about it. If there is a human position in the middle, the organization man is one disaster and the beat generation is another.
Okay.
I'll take you off the hook once by slightly shifting the emphasis and going into communication. Two points to be made there, I think. One is that these young men, these adolescents, these infants, are able to achieve wide publicity by the mere fact of their revolt. This is what mass communications has done to their inchoate actions. The other thing is that their communication, on the other hand, is turned inward to themselves or to their small group. The thing that astonishes me is that if you really are revolting against something and feel it passionately enough, You want to communicate it, certainly, to others and to the widest audience possible. But these young men have not even learnt the art of communicating outward. They are engaged in a private conversation with themselves.
But look how many millions of us are looking in on and eavesdropping upon that conversation. This, I don't think, can be a tribute just to what's happened to society in general. There are many things going on at this moment that the mass media do not pick up and make with, as they have with the
generation. I still want to accuse you of being a malefactor. You see, you have to have a subject for your symposium. So sooner or later, in the course of having a year of subjects, the Beat Generation becomes a subject.
But
and
I also...
you have to have articles for magazines, and sooner or later you do one on the Beat Generation because somebody has mentioned it.
But of course, we also have to have guests, and the very fact that three distinguished people can come together to discuss the Beat Generation angrily, Miss Manners more in anger, what's the answer to this? There must be some appeal. What does this mean? What does the Beat Generation mean in our society?
I don't know.
Mr.
Why
didn't
you bring Allen Ginsberg up here? Let him speak for himself.
Well, so you only had to come from New Brunswick, and he'd have to come from San Francisco.
He's in New York somewhere, I've been told.
Ought to bring him here, then.
Before, Mr. Charter, you were saying that this was one aspect of a much larger one that included delinquency, that included, as far as I'm concerned, certain forms of abstract expressionism, this whole kick business. It is in a wider frame. It isn't just these young men or middle-aged young men out in San Francisco writing Howl and other things.
I think some of the same forces that produced juvenile delinquency have produced the Beat Generation among the literate.
You want to go on about that?
It's a terribly complicated one, but somehow, whatever forms of Kerouac and whatever forms of Ginsberg... has left them feeling that the world is so bad that they have to be self-seekingly exhibitionist about it, that they have to gang up in a separate group against everything orthodox and going that there is nothing, you see, a complete black and white rejection of everything the world stands for. And this accompanied with the fact that they even refuse to grow up.
And how do you relate to this?
Partly because the essential experience I see in the Beat Generation is kicks, fun morality. It's good if it feels good at this point. You want to carry it a bit further? What psychologists called appetencies are at work. There's a difference between a value and an appetency.
That's new. I never heard
appetency is a choice made on the basis of how one's appetite is adjusted at that moment. For example, if you put a white rat in a cage and put an electric grid across the middle of it, and a bait on the other side, say a piece of cheese or a female or anything that a white rat might want, you can measure how much punishment he will take in order to get the thing he wants. But there will be no consistency to his value choices. He will take more punishment at one time, and other times, if he's just fed, he's not going to cross this thing even if the current is turned off.
We're not crossing lines?
No, I am simply trying to make a distinction. That he is making choices. He is making value choices, but he is making spur-of-the-moment value choices, as you might decide to have bean soup rather than tomato soup.
Mr. Pothorst, I'm sorry, I thought...
Whereas a value is a choice made in terms of a longer life sense. Now, to be sure, there is a life sense involved in the Beat Generation, but it's such a short and shallow one that I think these people are operating on appetencies rather than values.
Well, what appetite do they satisfy in us that, again, whether for purposes of a program or purposes of an article, we've devoted so much time to them?
Well, a self-conscious sense of guilt.
Self-conscious sense of superiority, I would
both,
say.
Both, but we're responsible people, therefore we worry about problems,
say. Let me ask Mr. Pothorst.
Well, hadn't we ought to make a distinction here between the Beat Generation considered as a literary movement and the Beat Generation considered as a movement of testimony regarding the problems of the young, and particularly juvenile delinquency? It seems to me that the Beat Generation came into public attention when it did, for two reasons, one of them literary, the other sociological. Everybody in America who was concerned at all with literature had been worried and disturbed by the young writers who appeared after the Second World War and seemed to lack the kind of power and distinction that the lost generation writers of the 20s presumably had. And these people came along and made some effort to dramatize the situation of the young, and it was an effort that had echoes in the Lost Generation and many other such traditions in modern literature. This was one, so this seemed to be more like it. This is what young people are supposed to be doing. Americans always feel that young people ought to be rebellious anyway. It's healthy. And
considering the quality of the literature, or the lack of quality of the literature, the sociological problem must be real in order to allow anybody to take this literature.
I quite agree. The people who began promoting this thing, with one or two exceptions, were not particularly interested in this stuff as literature, I think, but were interested in it as sociological document, and it seemed to offer an opportunity to understand our youth.
Even the writing, as writing, is a complete set of impromptus. Kerouac is not without a small talent, but he has certainly never wasted an atom of his talent on revision or reconsidering
his
material.
Well, he doesn't believe in it.
I'm sure that at this point I know.
An artist who doesn't even believe in art is something.
May I interject?
I guess I can't.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
On this point of revision, Kerouac himself told me that he did not believe in revision. I asked him why. And apparently both Ginsberg and Kerouac have associated themselves with something I know nothing about, is the tradition of spontaneous writing in Chinese literature.
They want to be Dionysian.
Well, the notion is, you see, that you're supposed to sit around for 6 months or 6 years, however long it may be, and clear your mind of Kant. You just sit and contemplate and make a real effort to empty your mind, which means that you empty it of falsity, and nobody seems to believe that you empty it of truth when you do this. Anyway, you empty it, and having done this, and this is supposed to be a real spiritual discipline, you then sit down and pour it forth, and whatever comes out is it. This is truth, and must not be revised, since that would presumably ruin it. Though, of course, Malcolm Cowley did a lot of editing on the road before it was published. I guess it's all right for somebody else to revise it.
Miss Manis?
Well, I was just going to say that this very able definition of the works of Kerouac, how it's done, is really boiled down to its essence, is how to get something for nothing. And this is a reflection of society at large. And adults are just as guilty as these young people. It's in every possible area of life, the business of giving as little as possible and getting as much as possible. And I'm not really surprised that we do have a beat generation, because this is, in a sense, the order of the day. Do not give in work, in thought, in perseverance, in all these things. It sounds stuffy, I know. But still, unless you are willing to expend this energy in learning and in working, how can you ever produce anything? Yet these men produce merely, is it, by sitting and washing themselves into a void.
You mean we take them unto ourselves because we admire them? They're doing what we would do?
No, not that. I just think that they are another reflection, a rather distorted reflection, of American life as it is now.
Well, frankly, if I had to take my choice, if these were the only choices, if I had to take a choice between living by the Madison Avenue ideal or going beat, I'd go beat.
I think most of us would, but the point really is that these are not the only two alternatives, and one of the things I think we all object to in the beat generation, and this is characteristic of the refusal to think precisely and the complete lack of intellectual and spiritual discipline behind the literary movement, this refusal to admit the existence of any but these two extreme and very sordid alternatives. Allen Ginsberg says you either burn to death in your gray flannel suit on Madison Avenue, or, in effect, you go mad.
It's nonsense.
And, of course, it's nonsense.
Well, these are disturbed boys. They've got a little talent, and they've had a lot of promotion. But how else can one say that?
Just a second. You say this is nonsense. And yet it does seem to me that there are many things more in anger, in fact. And there are many things that I've heard you say, Mr. Chaudhry, that would lead me to suspect that you, in a sense, were the teachers of these boys. That they had to be taught this. You talk about parents handing something down.
No. As a matter of fact, I quote you a quote from Kerouac, who puts me in my place in the Dharma Bums.
Of course,
whatever I'm teaching, this is nothing Kerouac wants any part of.
Of course, you'd make your choice if faced with the two extremes of...
I said if these were the only two choices. I think there's a much longer choice and an important one. I think there's a... There's such a thing as the continuity of the race on this planet. I'm a parent. I don't know what sort of job I can do of raising our three kids. I'm afraid of every bit of advice I have to give them, how they're supposed to behave in the community and what they're supposed to do next and what choices they should make. I have to gamble it all on the fact that I had parents and they had parents and those parents had parents and that they are the sons of this chain and that it's an important chain, one that's meaningful, and whatever confusions go on, they are part of this continuity, an idea of the race on the planet. And only this is the only thing I can latch on to as a continuity. I don't want them to respect me. I want them to feel sorry for me in the long run. The old boy did the best he could.
See, here's another generation feeling sorry for itself.
Well, I was going to say, it's a chilling thought that this beat generation are going to be parents. I never thought of that before.
Well, I think we should have a moment of silence.
I would rather have the kids say, well, the old boy really did try, didn't he? And he was a pretty good old duffer at that, with all his mistakes. And God knows we're not going to do much better in our turn. Well, but let's keep on. It's a good chain.
All I've been trying to get at, really, is the question to put to you, is that, put it in this way, I gather you don't think you beat the beat generation.
I certainly did not. I beat them. I feel sorry for them. As a matter of fact, had they been beaten... we were looking at some pictures of these hipsters on motorcycles with their leather jackets and so forth. Had they worn their leather jackets and driven their motorcycles over a ridge where there'd been some real shooting and seen some of them splattered to pieces and really, really had it rough, had they really taken a beating, they wouldn't be beat.
You think this is true, Miss
Absolutely. I subscribe to that.
You mean it's an absence of experience?
It's an absence of toughness, of real toughness, the toughness of disciplines. I'm sorry for them that they haven't got it, because this is a formless and terrible world without it.
Of course, in terms of what Mr. Charlie said before, you're talking about all of us. They don't have it because we haven't handed it down to them.
Yes.
Okay, I would buy that.
All right, if you...
It's also very difficult to hand down anything that stays in place because society changes out from under us so fast. For example, in Italy...
We can't give an example. That's what's going to make people tune in next week. I'm sorry, Mr. Ciotti, but thanks for joining me. John Ciotti, Mario Manis, and Norman Podhoretz. Thank you very much. We'll be back on The Open Mind next week with a discussion of USA, the Fountain of Youth, and I think in a very real sense we'll be continuing this discussion of Beat and Young and other generations. See you then on The Open Mind.